Blog Talk Radio.
Theory
mathematical theory or law, physics, you just, I mean, it blew me away. And it was never something that I could really always put my head around. And we talked a great deal about sacred geometry in past shows. And, I'm grateful to notice, too, George, that, I mean, a lot of people are going to our past shows. Boy, oh boy, we've got a number of thousands of hits on our last shows, you know. So,
we've covered a lot of areas in the last 4 years, Leo. And, we're not getting any younger either. But Greg Graydon, I've done a lot of work.
A lot about him over the years.
On his materials.
I've
and,
seen a lot of his
I thank God for how he was able to put it into an understanding. And, when I think of Greg Braden, I think of his work with defining the God Code and genetic doctors like Dr. Bruce Lipton, who's mapped the genomes.
Video talks about that, okay, as well. It gets into that. I should play that tonight as a preference to start off so we can talk about it, because it's right in what we've been talking about, George. And, it takes
well,
us right
on, my friend.
Yeah, do you mind? Yeah, it's only
no,
it's
go
6 minutes.
Ahead, Leo.
It's 6 minutes long, but I've got
a cup of
be...
coffee here, and I'd love to listen to it.
Yeah, hang on 1 second. I'll get it.
All right, here we go.
Yeah, let's see if I can get it started here. It's called Ascension 2012. Greg Braden, one of two, author of the God Code. Okay, so I'm gonna try to put that up right now.
Yeah.
Cracked without fail. Solar eclipse, every lunar eclipse, and even takes into account changes in the rotation and the speed of the rotation of the Earth to accommodate these. So without question, we know that it is an accurate system of time keeping. The one thing it does not take into account, however, is the human response during the cycles of time that it is tracking. This, what we know is that there are cycles, geologic cycles, measurable cycles, that we can see in the geologic record that have happened time and time and time again. And the Mayan calendar appears to accommodate and allow for these cycles as well, such as magnetic reversals of the Earth. And the a growing body of research and scientific consensus suggests that we are, in fact, in one of those cycles right now, the cycle of a 180-degree magnetic reversal or a flip. In the sense of the magnetic fields of the Earth. So the calendar marking 2012, it's showing us a window of time with regard to the cycles themselves, how we respond to the changes that we feel in our bodies and the changes that were shown in the world around us remains up to us as individuals and collectively. A growing body of research now, in addition to showing that the cycles are occurring, strongly suggests that how we experience those cycles will be determined by how we respond to the changes. And from my perspective, this is what the great masters and the spiritual teachers for over 5,000 years have been preparing us for. And what they're saying to us is if you live your life in this way, and if you change your life, you'll change your body. And as you change your body, you'll change your world. Quantum physics now strongly supports precisely such a premise that the world around us, in terms of the things that we see and experience, is nothing more, nothing less than a mirror of what we have become collectively from within. So our fear, our anger, our hate, our rage, our joy, our love, our compassion, our understanding, our forgiveness, all appear to be mirrored and accommodated within these great cycles of time. I think what we're seeing is that this calendar is simply showing us a window of opportunity. It's saying now is a time when all of the parameters that have held human consciousness in place for 25,000 years, all of those parameters are falling away. They've been like training wheels, if you will. holding elements of consciousness in place. So the training wheels fall away, and on that date in December of 2012, we, perhaps for the first time in a long time, will be more of ourselves than we've ever been before, without the magnetics of the earth holding our perceptions and our beliefs and our bias in place. And it will be the opportunity for us to demonstrate what we've practiced for so long and become truly who we are. It's not, Earth is going through a magnetic reversal. It's happened 14 times in the last 4.5 million years. It's never happened to 6 billion people on the Earth, to the best of our knowledge. Prior to the time that the magnetic fields drop completely to zero, they begin to slow. And we are now at the slowest or the lowest magnetic point that we've seen in the last 2,000 years. But what that means is the magnetic field, the shield or the buffer of the magnetic field that has always surrounded the Earth is its weakest point that's been in the last 2,000 years. It makes us very susceptible to solar influences. We're having unprecedented solar flares, highly ionized plasma and particles superheating our atmosphere. And because our shields aren't there, it allows for a melting of the poles, for example. And we know that is what is happening. And as the north and south poles, as that ice turns into water, it dilutes the oceans, changes the salinity, changes the temperatures that drive all of the weather patterns. We know that the sun has already lost, essentially, its north and south poles. They don't exist on the sun any longer. The sun has many smaller north and south magnetic fields, little vortices. There is no north and south pole on the sun any longer. Other planets in our solar system appear to be going through a similar experience where the magnetic fields are declining very quickly because we believe they're not inhabited the way ours are. It doesn't appear to have the same influence. So as those magnetic fields fall, it allows for greater solar influences on the planet. Those are the physical changes that we're seeing. The magnetic fields also act as the glue in consciousness, and as the glue becomes weaker and weaker, we have a greater opportunity to transcend the beliefs that have been held in place so strongly for many thousand, now 5,000 years or so. One thing that I... So the two, the physical parameters and consciousness dovetail, and the physical parameters appear to give us a window of opportunity for the consciousness parameters to shift. And if we can become aware of that, then we can make use of this opportunity and say, hey, this is the first time in a long time we've been able to do something like this. What will we do? Well, because of the way the magnetic fields are holding this consciousness together, things that are not in integrity seem to implode upon themselves, and they collapse under their own weight. So we can apply those understandings in our personal lives and our global lives. And while it doesn't give an excuse for what's happened, it might help to explain and maybe provide a framework for people to understand what it is that's going on.
What do you think, George?
Oh, great stuff. He's great. He really is.
Yeah, no, I thought that was, and there's a whole bunch of them here that you know that he has on YouTube. You can go to Greg Braden, Braden, B-R-A-D-E-N. Just look that up.
Leo, we have talked about this for years now, the same things, and a lot of times. You know, I would go to him and try to get more of an understanding of some of the studies that he's put into it. And, for me, I think his latest work is Fractal Time, where he talks about these different cycles. And it's amazing because it opened my eyes, but also it's part of the cycle that we've been following with the Mayan calendar. With Kellerman's work.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. No, it all happens there.
Well, you know, it's what he's talking about with the sun and the polar reversals. You know, that's happening right now. We're experiencing that.
Mm. Oh, yeah, we are. Now, we've talked about that. It's amazing. It's always amazing to me how much actually talked about on the show. Yeah.
You know, ever since the October the 28th, which was the ending of the cycle,
right.
You know, things, they haven't taken a turn other than, I don't know, it's a change of things, and it's
yeah.
a change of cycle that I'm experiencing, and I can
yeah.
only experience this on a personal level. But I'm very concerned, I think, with the environment, the world around me. You know, if not to take my mind off, you know, my own physical body and my ailments and my own life and so forth. But I'm very concerned, I think, with the earth, with the sun, with the energies, with the weather patterns, and you know, we've had a unique unique season, you know, this whole year, not only where I live, but throughout the whole world.
Wow. No, I have to agree with you, George. Yeah. So tell me something. What do you think of this 11-11-11? I mean, aside from it being Maria Algieri's birthday, which if she happens to be listening to us tonight, happy birthday, Maria.
Maria,
right,
yeah.
George?
Yeah.
What do you think? She might be listening to us, you know?
Yeah, I just want to finish. You know, I think it's the emotional influence that all this stuff, this physical stuff, is having on our emotions or our consciousness. You know, Leo, I've been thinking about this 11-11-11 all day. And, you know, I have to say that years ago I met a fellow who was a Mason, but he was a master Mason, and 33rd degree, and then some. He was a very unique man, very modest, very humble, and very giving. And I mean, he was a multimillionaire, but you would never know that just meeting him. But he
33rd degree Mason.
Excuse me?
He's a 33rd degree Mason, right?
Yes, yes, and then some, Lee. I'm sure there's
yeah.
other stages too.
He goes to 48 or something.
President of different lodges, you know, from different states over the years. But you know, his credentials were perfect, and I never questioned him. But
yeah.
for a human being, he was a fine man. I respected him, and yet he referred to me about the 11-11, how it had some special purpose and meaning for us in our lives now, because we will experience that. You know, it just so happens he died probably 10-12 years ago. He was
really?
Never able to live to see this number or see this day.
That was your friend, I referenced it.
And you know, I could understand why, because of the world around us right now. I mean, there's so much going on and so many different things that, you know, you can't make this stuff up. And it's just a fulfillment of conscious strings of thought that have been building and building, you know, for a few months to, you know, thousands of years. And, you know, it's a time where they're all coming together, completing themselves in whatever cycle that they're on, regardless of the time factors that they're locked into.
Yeah.
I think that it is a very special time for us and for the advancement of our three-dimensional consciousness on this level. And, you know, Mother Nature can turn things around in 24 hours, and it would change us 180 degrees.
Absolutely.
But what Greg was saying about, you know, the less gravity and the Earth is slowing down, that
right.
is one factor that we have here, that, you know, our souls or maybe our consciousness could
right.
fly off into different dimensions of reality and may not come back, you know. And, you know, it's more from a real relationship to the world and to this universe as we know it. But that is just one experience of higher realms of three-dimensional of are experienced.
Yeah, that's for real. That's for real.
What do you think of this 111 is, Leo? What does it mean to you?
Well, I don't know. I've been basing everything on the latter day prophecy, and to me, I don't know. I feel lighter the last couple of weeks, even though it's been an unusual couple of weeks. We had a major power outage here for 3 to 4 days, I was out without power and cold nights. It made you think, you know. I mean, there were almost a million, there were over a million people at one time without lights here, a million customers actually, so almost the entire state was without lights in Connecticut for almost a week in some areas. And it brought to mind how primitive we are. I mean, you know, and how people before telephones and before computers, how they communicated, you know, how they lit their homes, how they stayed warm, you know, how things took on different priorities, you know, where, you know, how do you cook your meals, how do you get clean water, how do you, you know, where are you going to, how are you going to get warmth, you know, and shelter. You know, you have shelter, but, you know, it gets pretty cold in there. You can't light a fire in the house, you know. So,
yeah.
You know, hopefully we had, and we were fortunate that we had some good neighbors who invited us over to stay warm through that week. I did all the cooking at night for supper and cooked everything on the grill for 3 or 4 days. And then we all ate and had a nice, his house was nice at 70 degrees in there with the wood stove going. And, we enjoyed each other's company for, you know, quite a few days. And but it was kind of funny because you find yourself all of your resentments or whatever or your fears or your, you know, sense of isolation, whatever it may be, they all disappear when you have this kind of thing happen where you start seeing the community come together. You can see people going house to house, seeing if everybody's okay. Towns opening up, shelters, things like that. So it's a really it was amazing to see that kind of bonding of consciousness, you know, everywhere. And of course, the anger being vented at CLMP, which is a lighting company by the state, the governor's speech every day. Twice a day, he came out and talked about it. So it was like, you know, it was a crisis that was created by nature, and for some reason brought everybody kind of together
right.
to with the thought of restoring. And I believe that's what it was. You know, there's so many people out of power that the one true thought of anybody, probably connected thought of millions of people, was when is the power going to go on? You know what I mean? And visualizing when the power will go on, so that there was a tremendous force of thought by an entire state forced against this, this company in order to get the lights back on. You know, so I guess what I'm saying is that was an experience for me when I saw the power of consciousness, you know, move a mountain, basically overcome a tremendous obstacle, and restore the power within a week or so to everybody in the state. So it was like, if we can do that, we can overcome a lot. But I guess the thought of being thrown back into a semi-primitive state shocks you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, Leo. You know, you got to take a look. What the hell is going on here? And you know, I think purposely the state of Connecticut, didn't cause that to happen. And one of the reasons I would say is probably because of finances. Who's paying for this? Because it gets very expensive.
Well, it's still important.
You know, and it's right. You only have so much money. You can only do so much with it. But, you know, sometimes, you know, somebody's looking for somebody to blame or a scapegoat here. And it just so happens that these guys up in the polls and so forth were a lot easier to shake your finger at. And, you know, you blame them. But, you know, it's we become so complacent that, you know, that's the way it is. I remember down on the island of losing electric, you know, because of hurricanes.
Right.
And I was without electric for, oh, geez, maybe 3 days, 4 days. And you know, it gets kind of hairy. And, you know, everybody's, you know, at each other's throats, in a matter of speaking. Waiting to take a nice hot shower. But, you know, sometimes you gotta think twice and buckle up and, you know, think
that's
ahead.
Right.
Well, what can I do tomorrow, you know, for tomorrow? And, you know, it's not a matter of gathering wood and food, but basically that's it. It's preparing. And that's something we've never really had to do, in a matter of speaking. But when it comes to survival, you know, I think it's great to take a look at, you know, the options that we have to work with. And, you know, I'm glad right now that I have generators and I have my own water supply. And I have a nice piece of property. You know, for some people, you know, they don't have the basic necessities of shelter and provisions. And it can be quite harmful.
Well, that's very true, George. Very, very true.
So you got to look at the reality of the situation, Leo, especially right now with, you know, these 10 cities that are going up across the nation. And, you know, the 99% right now, there's no more money. And, you know, what money that is, you can't do anything with, and people have had enough. And, you know, I hate to say this, but, you know, people are at the end of their strings at this point, and we need an intervention. And, by God, I hope that one pops up pretty soon because we could use it.
I think it will. I think it already has.
In the Northern Hemisphere, and, you know, the Southern Hemisphere was hammered in their season, but our season is coming, so you got to buckle up. That's all I can say.
They had a real bad year, on the Caribbean. We got hit a number of times.
Well, you know, and even they talked about a hurricane up in Alaska, you know? And I remember being hit by almost a hurricane on Long Island in December, and it was something that was strange. For a while, I thought it was part of the HAARP program, you know, because the snowflakes on it were as big as golf balls, you know, but they're very heavy rain or very heavy snow, and it accumulated very quick. But you know, it was really the start of these nor'easters that are quite frequent now that, you know, years ago, they weren't like this.
Excuse me. I choked there. I was drinking some
water. Here again, you know, it's like Greg Braden talks about the electromagnetics of the Earth and of our solar system. You know, it's affected not only us and our sun, which has shifted its magnetics, but also the other planets in our solar system. And, you know, this is causing a lot of distortions in the magnetics. And, of course, we're running high now on the sun's peaking activities with these solar storms. And, you know, it wouldn't take much now to knock out some of these satellites that we have, you know, by some of these multi-storms coming off the sun. Have you been following any of these, Leo?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, in fact, I just saw something tonight. I think it was actually on the news recently. They were talking about it, major news. They were talking about the solar activity, the rise in solar activity. But I think we're dealing with something quite, like Braden said, we're dealing with something, cosmic. We're dealing with a cosmic clock here. It's about ready to strike 12, I really, really believe that that's what we're dealing with, because, he said it was every 25,000 years, that they've seen this, and it's like we know that we can trust that data because we have the ability to do that, and studies and people, geologists and so on, going back. Can see how many years back. It's like the circles in a tree, or how old the tree is, discovered.
For any of the listeners out there, maybe we could just take a minute and say, you're talking about the precession of the equinox.
That's right.
That every 25,900 or 600 years, we make one revolution in our elliptic orbit. Which is around a star that is the main star in our neck of the woods.
Oh.
And
around
every 25,000 years, we cycle the star. And
in the galaxy?
For 12,000 years, we are near its light. And as we go away from this source, we actually sleep and the energies are less. So it's like the light of the star, the central star, that we revolve around in our arm in the Milky Way that gives us this light. And it moves, even though it takes 26,000 years, roughly, to make a complete cycle, but it only moves 1 degree within a circumference of 360 degrees.
Yeah.
So, it's a very slow-moving cycle that we are in, and we're at a point right now where we're closest to our central sun, and that's why we have the energies, we're receiving the energies from the galactic field that we only receive every 12,000 years accordingly. Now, there is an area which the Hindus talk about, which is the photon belt. And what this is for 1,000 years, we enter a field of photon light, which is it raises the frequencies of the vibration that we are subjected to. And we will be in that. We just entered into this field. And for the next 970 years or so forth, we will have the additional benevolence of this field of photon energy. And but in the meanwhile, at the same point, we are having a shift in the polarization of our character from male to a female. And that's what is meant right now. It's become a feminine world, or we're going back to the feminine the feminine energy, and that is Mother Nature, and that is everything female. So this started, I think, about in 1989 with some of the astrological conjunctions I've been watching, that the energies are being turned over back to female sources. And I think Margaret Thatcher, who was the Prime Minister of England at that time, was one of the examples that I was making, I think, for this change of energies that we're into. And right now, that is what is happening. And, Hillary Clinton is another example, and you'll see, from... in the years to come, that feminine energy will be the dominating force that will direct our lives, in a sense. Not force, I should say.
It kind of is already. You got Merkel in Germany, and you got you got that woman there in South Africa, I think her name, she just got the prize. I think she just won the election down there.
Yeah.
And then you have, you got Brazil, Chile. I think Chile has a woman president. We've seen tremendous number of women in the Congress and in the Senate.
I think that is good, Leo. I really do.
You've always said, the Queen of England and the Queen of somewhere else. But there is definitely a greater allure toward marketing and stuff, you know, of the feminines. The feminine is always, it's always been a marketable product, but, you know, even more so today with pornography on the loose and sex in the movies and, all the magazines and tabloids and everything, just the scream sexual scandals and things like this. And even now, I was going to ask you, George, since we're in the ethics period here, still undergoing the ethical transition, what do you think of this Penn State nightmare? All right. What happened there with Paterno? I mean, that is one sick fucking story. You know?
Yeah.
I think the reason it's exposed, and I'll tell you why, is this time frame we're in, from now until probably next year, we're going to see scandal after scandal after scandal, and the unveiling of all the secrets of all these bastards, you know what I mean? And, this is the time when people have to, their entire minds set will be against corporations, against, being very suspicious of their athletic, directors and teachers and stuff like that, as to what they're actually teaching, you know.
Man, why don't you slow it the hell down, my friend?
Of innocence, you know?
Well, yeah, all right. I'm sorry to say that things like that happen in this world. But, you know, instead of following this thing through, I'd be more respective of the other news in the world.
Hey,
number of men that were killed over there in Afghanistan.
Let me ask you this question, though.
There was an earthquake another earthquake in Turkey. And, you don't hear about this stuff, but, you hear about this. And also Michael Jackson's doctor was found guilty. I mean, it's ludicrous because you don't get the news. You get propaganda. And yet this stuff sells, and people are, their blood, they're hungry. They're hungry for this stuff, and they want to kill her. They want them. They want them now, and they're going to get them either way, But in the meanwhile, nobody gets fed. The burner, or whatever they have in the oven, is burned 2 hours ago, and they're infatuated by this stuff on TV. Don't mind me. It's like Facebook all over in your face.
George, you're the one who has a love affair with Judge Judy.
Well, yeah, you're right, because you know what?
Right,
I don't have a love affair. Come on, give me a break. You wouldn't get away with that in a real court of law. But here again, we haven't had a real court of law.
She would tear me another a-hole, I swear to God. She would hate me to no end. my God, she wouldn't get too far with me. That one just too much to take. Yeah. Can you imagine being grilled?
It's all entertainment anyways, Leo.
Can you imagine being grilled by that bitch, as a wife? Holy jeez, man.
Well, I would walk out of the court.
I'll guarantee she must be a holy helen bitch to live with.
You have to understand, it's the contracts that these people have. Well, no, I have to say, she is a good person.
Lovely woman.
But she doesn't pull any
show.
Punches, she'll read between the lines. and call a spade in a manner of speaking. I say that with no racial slurring, but, you know,
are you calling Judge Judy a spade?
What?
I said, are you calling Judge Judy a spade?
No, I wouldn't say that. I'm saying that she is smart.
I think she's a spade. I think she's a real spade. Whatever that spade means, it says that's what she is.
She's a mother. I mean,
she's
also
and she
knows the law, and you know, she also can read between the lines. She knows when you're lying.
Yeah, she knows when you're bad or good. So be good for goodness.
Oh, come on! Don't take it from me. You know, it's lately the only thing I'm watching on TV is Russian news, because I get more of the story of what's going on in the world.
Right.
Judge Judy and The Price is Right. I love that show, and they never call me to come on down. I've been waiting for them.
Bob Barker retired.
You know,
after he got caught in a sex scandal, you know, goosing all the babes back there. Did you know
that?
Bob Barker.
Right? Well, hey, what the hell?
You know, The Price
is
Right.
I guess he could do it. Yeah, well,
he was 85 years old, right? And one of the coworkers threw a sexual harassment suit at him, and one of those price turning babes, you know, the ones that came out with they tell you what price do you bid, you know, the pretty girls that would come out and turn and point to the price, you know.
One of those babes should have done is just hit him over the head with a frying pan.
He's
the court.
They did, and they won, and that was the problem. They got huge settlements off this guy because he was like, and then they finally said, hey, we know you own this thing, but if you want to keep it going, we suggest that you resign. So he retired, and then they got some. I forget who they got. They got some comedian.
You think they could do that to the president, Leo? You think we could make him an offer?
Oh, I wish. All
what
you got to
do
is grope somebody.
I can read it now.
President
arrested for groping.
Like,
on the Air Force One. Oh, I just laughed myself. I'm sorry.
No,
but you
got to
see the humor in this. And remember,
like Obama was supposedly having an affair with one of his aides, right? And that was covered up really, really good. But I guess Michelle Obama, you know, suspected it, found out about it, and just about castrated the bastard, you know.
Yeah. Wow.
And so he's not allowed to have that aide with him anymore. And there was a picture of him and this aide walking.
So her name Condoleezza Rice or what?
No, she was a gorgeous.
I slapped my other cheek for that one.
Yes.
I'm sorry, Leo.
But they were going into this hotel room together, and it was on a security cam. So it was when he was campaigning. And it was really something. And the media covered that all up. But it was Michelle Obama was flipping mad. I read it in the tabloid.
Can you imagine what the politics would be without the interchanging not going on? I mean, this goes back all the way to, you know, at least Kennedy and Nixon. I don't know. I don't think Eisenhower was playing around kind of guy. And I know
you know
Truman was.
You know the mileage.
Betty or Bess would kill him.
You know the mileage that Bill Clinton got off of Monica Lewinsky and Paula Jones and all that? Oh, my God.
Well, yeah,
and today,
but,
people are still lining up
also
to shake it.
Take a look at Hillary, too.
Grimy hands, yeah.
Well, the treasurer, what was his name? They found him in one of the parks. Anyways, she had an affair with one of the treasury guys in the executive office.
Oh, that Vince something.
Vince Foster, that's right. Oh, yeah. So.
Yeah, yeah. Her affair was that incident.
All part of the Rose Law Firm.
Park,
anyways, you know, that goes way back, but, you know, you don't hear too much of that. They have to write this out in history in some way. You know, they do it, but.
News
you know,
about
what they don't like, they just write right out, you know. But.
That's exactly what they do. And,
well.
They don't read about it. They're not going to know about it, you know? So, and then it's so bizarre, who the hell's going to believe it? You know, so, it's a no-win situation. You know, we've been bitching on the radio for 10 years, and it's like, you know, what the fuck? You know, what the hell's going on? And we know we had hundreds of thousands of listeners to it, so maybe, like, I'm just hoping that if one listener hears something, then it goes to a second and a third and a fourth, and zoom, you know, just viral, goes viral, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what you want. So, anyway, I'm getting off subject here. So tell me, George, if you had the choice of telling somebody something that you know will really hurt them, and something that if you don't say it won't hurt them at all, but I mean, if you tell somebody a truth that if you tell somebody something that you know, that you feel they should know about someone, what would you do? Rather than ignore it, would you ignore that and just say, you know, I'm getting back to this Paterno thing, this Penn State thing. All these guys ignored the fact that they were using these, that this bastard was molesting 10-year-old boys, all right? Yeah, Paterno let it go, and the president let it go, and everybody let it go who was in the, you know, university there, until somebody finally came up and admitted it, you know. What would you have done if you, let's say Paterno was, or that guy was your best friend, you know, and, you know, Paterno was your best friend. What would you, talk to
him? I would approach him personally.
Would you?
Yes.
Then what would you do?
Nothing.
I mean, if he said, hey,
What can I do? I just expressed to him my feelings. And then nobody else, I have to, you know, this is between him and I, period. What he wants to do is his story, but, you know, at least I release myself of it. That's all.
Yeah, no, but let's say you knew that this guy was raping this 10-year-old boy, okay, in a shower. You walked in and you just happened to see him in the locker room, and he's got this kid up against the wall and banging him from the ass. That was the description on ESPN and all these other, that's what the reports were, right? Now, this was an eyewitness, okay, and many other eyewitnesses saw him raping these kids as well. But only two of them actually went to make complaints, and they went to Paterno, and he whitewashed the whole thing, okay, and never got further. In fact, what he did is he offered the one guy who saw this, he offered him an assistant coach job, which the guy held for the last 10 years, all right, and he was just fired, all right, because he knew that the guy was a pedophile, and he had seen it.
What are you asking me? Is that justified in what they did?
No. I'm saying, what would you do if you happen to be a guy who saw that happen, knowing that this is a horrible...
Leo, I don't know what I would have done.
Unless I was in that situation.
Because, you know, there is no right or wrong way, and there is no left or right.
Wait just a minute. There's no wrong in being a 10-year-old boy?
Well, you know, I'd have to see it, and at that time, then
I would make a determination
on what to do.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, he's raping a 5-year-old boy in the shower, all right? And you don't know what to do? First thing
you do is...
in a fucking head.
I don't know what I would do. But first of all, I would have a towel wrapped around them, and it would be taken away from that older person. I would make sure of that.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not my place. Other than, you know, I just stop it. It's not my place.
Hey, what? You just go, hey, what the hell's going on? Hey, oh, boy, hey, you know. And then I said, you want to join me? You know, what if the guy said, hey, you want to join me? The kid's hot. You know what I mean?
What if somebody was standing over somebody
and these pedophile
rings, poking them with a stick and making them bleed? Wouldn't you go over there and take that stick away from that person or take that off the person off that person? Of course you would.
If I knew him, I would have beaten him three times over. If I knew who the bastard was,
it's a lot easier to sit back and say what I could do, what I would do, and you know if I do. But you know that's not the situation. And what he did was wrong. Period. There's no way that you know I could find some right in that. Even for the coaches or the people underneath. I mean, for them to hold back that information, you know, they're just as guilty as a person with a kid.
Exactly.
You know,
it's just
because you didn't get caught doesn't mean that it's you're not bad.
The reason he didn't get caught is because the guys got they whitewashed the whole thing. They paid them off.
I'd fire them all. I mean, you know, if that's the way it is, that's the way it is.
Yeah. Hey, no, exactly. You'd have to do that. But the first thing you would do, don't say you wouldn't do this. If you saw that hairy bastard raping a 10-year-old boy in a shower, what the hell would you first do? Besides trip over your towel, probably.
No, I would at least stop the boy if the boy was being harmed or hurt.
Yeah, you go in there.
You know, it'd be a different story if the kid was saying, no, let him go, you know. Even that situation, I would have to stop and back off. It's not my right.
Yeah, even if the kid was having an orgasm, I don't care. That's wrong. You know what I mean? So it's like, you know.
It depends on the situation. I'll tell you what. There's other things that we could talk on, but, you know, what this guy did was sick, and it's not right. And,
I think
he's going to account for his actions. That's all.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. But the thing is that these kind of scandals create public opinion. Okay, and these kind of make make for harder or lesser laws. People push for these laws. And, you know, a guy like that, you know, he shouldn't be out on any kind of bail. That son of a bitch should be behind bars, all right, right now. All right? And he's not. I don't think he is. I don't know if they arrested him or not. I think they were going to arrest him, but, you know, the coach who did it, you know.
Yeah, but, Leo, you have to understand that we're at a time where even our legal system, you know, it has been turned upside down along with the financial world.
Hey,
and you don't know what is real and what isn't real. And it's just one big illusion. And that's the problem we have right now with the Constitution. We haven't been following our Constitution because everything is now it's on a contract basis. And it's been that way since, at least the last 60, 70 years.
Yeah.
It's right now that...
Let me state this because I wanted to kind of end the show tonight with this thought. Like for instance, that's why I brought up the Paterno case and others because I wanted to. In Connecticut, we're faced with a really strange thing. One of the worst, most heinous crimes committed in the 21st century was committed in Connecticut, and the two guys were caught who did it. And one was given the death penalty, the other was sentenced to death as well. And that just happened this month, all right? Most of the year, the trials were Hayes and Jarzowski or something the guy's name was. But these two guys, you know, broke into a house, hit the owner, who was a Dr. Pettit. He's a prominent doctor in Cheshire. Well-known doctor, and they broke into his house, hit the guy in the head with a baseball bat, okay, brought him unconscious in the cellar, because they broke into a window in the cellar, you know, and the Pettit came down with a baseball bat, wondering what it was, and what they did is they grabbed the bat and they whacked him in the head with it unconscious. So he was downstairs, They went upstairs, and what they did is they raped his wife, okay? Raped his kids, his two daughters, all right? And then burned them alive in their house. You believe that? And the only and the survivor was Pettit, the Dr. Pettit. He got it. He was able to crawl out unconscious. He gained consciousness, and the house was on fire, and he couldn't get he couldn't get anybody. He walked out of the house to the neighbor's house and to call for help, and then that's when the cops came. But there's more involved with it as well. But this whole damn thing was such a horrendous crime. Unbelievable crime, and people had to decide whether, since Connecticut had the death sentence, if these people deserved the death sentence. And after you saw the testimony, and after you heard the reports, there was no other way that they could not give this son of a bitch the death penalty. You know what I mean? Nobody in that deserved to live in society under any circumstances. You know, so we had to make this moral decision. Whether or not it was right to terminate the life of this son of a bitches. And the courts, with all their, after seeing everything and the testimony, they were just, like, flabbergasted and, at the barbaric and cruel, inhumane murderers these were. And decide. And it's the same with, I mean, even though this was a pedophile ring, and you got to wonder how far up the ladder it went. These boys were being farmed out, that's probably why Paterno was probably into it as well as so many others. There's a lot of reports about these pedophile rings. I had a guy on who did the Franklin scandal, which involved George H.W. Bush and boy prostitutes in the White House. That were furnished from Boys Town, all right? Boys Town, and remember the famous Boys Town?
The Mountdog Boys.
Yeah, but they were all farmed out, gimped out by the institutions themselves. The heads of the schools were all getting paid off for it. So they would pick out certain boys and certain girls that would be willing to do this stuff, and they pimped them out, and this went to the highest echelon in our country, in Washington D.C.
Well, you can say basically the same thing about some organized religions.
I know.
Have their own factions too.
Pedophilia is so big. It's such a big business, all right? Billions and billions and billions of dollars involved with pornography and trafficking and, sex workers and stuff. It's just, worldwide. So, and they come from all over the world, these men and women, virtually slaves.
Yeah.
It's really a sick thing, and what's happening, and... I just think it's time for our moral, if we have morality, if there is any morality left in humanity, then we should be outraged.
Sure there is, Leo. You're just going to have faith, my friend.
Totally outraged by what's going on, and I think people are, and they're waking up to it. So,
but at least they're waking up to it, but at least they're seeing that it's an illusion, that they could see to the illusion because, it's like we've been so complacent for years and servitude, to the masters, where we don't realize that these people have had a carrot in front of our eyes and they've been directing us for all these years and, talked us into giving over everything that we've had and what our children would have. But yet now the people are seeing it for what it is. And, hey, this is not right. And, I think people are waking up, Leo.
Of consciousness that's happening.
I'm just saying, don't pat a lying dog. Let a lying dog, a sleeping dog lie. Because once you get them ticked off, you got a problem. And I think right now we got a problem, and not only in Europe, but we also got a problem in our own backyard, and that's starting with Wall Street now. It's spread throughout the whole country, especially now because, you know, we not only have these camps, these protesting camps, we have also these homeless camps now that are starting from one end of the country to the other. And believe me, I remember each week to do some praying for them because, you know, there's so many people out of work. You know, there's no money. There's no place to stay. And yet, you know, you don't think about them. And yet it's happening more and more and more. And, you know, it's becoming unmanageable at times.
It is. It is.
And, I'm just sorry. You know, I'm grateful that I have what I have. But, you know, for somebody, you know, and what you say, people being without electricity for a week in Connecticut or 2 weeks, you know, you put it in the hands of some people who are really stressed already, and they ain't going to like that one bit, especially when you got baby formula, you have to warm up somehow because those babies have to be fed.
That's right.
Leo, it's time to say goodnight.
All kinds of problems that happen, you know.
Yeah.
And, no, we're not.
I do believe in a righteous God, and I do pray for our world. And, you know, I really know that, you know, it's going to work out. I really have a good feeling about that. And if nothing else, we will meet in a unity type of a consciousness. If not, we respect for one another. We may not like one another, but that's all right. But if we can respect and know that we all have the same rights and nobody is greater or smaller than anybody, that, you know, the world would be a happier place.
I'm respecting everybody's rights, you know, respecting everybody's, just like you said, respecting everyone's right to exist, you know. But when you have situations like I brought up earlier with these death trials, then, you know, you have to say, well, wait a minute, do these people actually have the right? No, they violated their right to live by their horrible actions that they did. So
yeah, maybe it's a higher authority, first of all, that's bringing on the synchronicity of these events taking place. And
well,
if nothing else,
but
it will give
time,
us
the only
understanding
remedy,
of things.
No, the only remedy I see that, that you know, unfortunately, the only remedy that society has is to lock up its criminals that are doing malice and murder and mayhem against their fellow citizens. So it's like they have no other choice, you know. Mind you,
you have another choice
by false claims and false false imprisonments, I'm sure, or minor drug offenses or stuff like that. But at the same time, there are some seriously violent...
Talking about minor drug offenses, Leo.
Yeah, those things, I mean, nobody cares about those. But the thing is that the big ones, you know, like murder, you know, rape, you know, the guys who's these fucking banksters...
That's why they call them capital crimes, you know, not...
white-collar crimes, you know, those kind of things. And it's like,
oh, yeah, well...
Yeah, you know, it's those are the kind of things that, you know, got to come to an end. And what I was trying to bring out tonight, unfortunately, we're not streaming live now, but people will catch this in the archive. What I wanted to bring out tonight is because, you know, is to face this moral question, you know, of what is moral and what is not moral, good and what is not good for.
Right.
Say good and not good. I mean, good for you personally, and good for those, you know, good for others. What's best for others, okay, and yourself. And the best I see can be both ways. The best for you can be silence, or the best for you can be speaking out. You know, so it's hard. It's a very, very hard question as to who takes responsibility. Like you said, you would go to your superiors and say, "Hey, I just saw this happening. You know, something should happen, right?" And then you wait a couple of days. You find nothing happened.
you go back and you say, hey, how come nothing happened? And they say, well, we want to keep it quiet, all right? And then all of a sudden they find out, you find out you got a termination notice because, you know, because you spilled the whistle, you know, you blew the whistle so on them. So it's like, you know, these are the things that you gotta question all the time is how far do you go? What's right and what's wrong? You know, just bringing it up to one level or bringing it up to, you know, or stopping it yourself and getting seriously involved with it or just walking away indifferently from it.
You know what I say?
What?
You know what I say? Sometimes you get so involved with things that, you know, you got to sit back and take a look because, you know, you shouldn't take it so serious. You know, it's all a game, and we all have different parts to play. But sometimes we take the part so so real that we become legends in our own mind. Leo, good night, my friend. God be with you, and I'll speak with you next week.
Oh, you're leaving me. Okay. All right, George. Well, on that thought, well, thank you for being on and sharing your wisdom with us. We appreciate that. So we'll talk to you next week.
Good night now.
Good night. Good one. And I want to thank everybody for joining us and tonight. And I hope that you, if you liked it, you'll tell your friends. We'll see you next week, Tuesday night, when we have a special guest and all kinds of news reports and stuff and keep you current on what's going on. So I want to thank you for listening tonight. Hope you enjoyed the show. George and I always get into discussions and different things. But, you know, I hope somebody, hope you people who might have think about it. Whenever you're in a quandary or a dilemma where you have that right or wrong decision to make, and my life would be better if I didn't interfere, if I just ignored this, you know, or can I live with myself by allowing this to happen, knowing that this is happening and not stopping it, you know? And, you know, if you know the truth, you know, then are you obliged to say it or, you know, can you hold it? And unfortunately, which has been the case with me so often in my life, is that if I've known the truth, it's very difficult not to want to say it. And unfortunately, I've done that most of my life. I've told the truth as I know it, and as I've seen it, and as I believe it. And I've always felt a relief, you know, a great relief of unleashing that guilt, of knowing, passing it on to the proper channel if you have to. But, we're at a time, I believe, where there's a wave of consciousness happening. There's going to be no question about that. And all the crimes of humanity are going to be exposed now because this is a time of judgment, folks. You know, if any time ever was, I guess we have to deal with our karma now. And I deal with mine every day as you deal with yours. We all carry some kind of baggage with us. So hopefully in the next year we'll be able to come to some terms with our own existence and forgive ourselves for being such jerks and forgive others for being as jerk, you know, as them. And I guess just try to accept humanity as it is and hope that it doesn't do any more harm to itself or others. And I don't know what more could be done. And but I just keep hoping that somehow in my own consciousness and my own ways of thinking that I can die free knowing that I left nothing here that would be incriminating to myself or to my name, you know, or to my time here. And that's very hard to do. You know, we all make mistakes, and we all say bad, you know, we all do things that we regret. And I guess that's just part of life. But you just hope that by the time you reach the age of whatever age you're waking up to, could be 10 or 20 or 50 or 100, you know, but whatever your age of awakening, just know that this is happening now. And as we celebrate the 11-11-11 day, again, I want to wish Maria Fix Algeri a happy birthday, and wherever she is. And I want to thank George again for being on tonight. And anyone who's listened, we appreciate you as an audience, and hope you enjoyed the show. So thank you, and have a pleasant evening. Nice weekend.